Hello, this is Ian with the News Gazette, dated Sunday, May 3rd, 2020. We'll start today on the front page of the paper, first with the Illinois Impact. ISBE changes course on grad ceremonies, cases on the rise in Rantoul and Champaign County. On second thought, the Illinois State Board of Education informed school districts on Saturday, drive-through, drive-in, and individualized graduation ceremonies at schools will be allowed. The change comes 3 days after an ISBE directive banned all of the above, forcing many districts to scrap plans and start over. Now, as long as all efforts are made to ensure social distancing and prevent mass gatherings of people, seniors will be able to receive their degrees one at a time on stage at school, which had been the plan at Benmont, Gibson, City Melvin Sibley, Rantoul, St. Joseph Ogden, Salt Fork, Tuscola, and Westville, among others. For the second straight day, Champaign County set a new 24-hour high for most newly confirmed COVID-19 cases, reporting 20 Saturday. That wraps up a week that also included an 11-case Thursday and 14-case Friday, pushing the county total to 169. The spike is due in part to a rise in cases in Rantoul. The 61866 zip code had 10 confirmed cases as of Thursday and now has 24, according to the CU Public Health District. Of the 169 cases countywide, 74 are considered active. Six of those residents are hospitalized, a number that's held steady all week. 89 are considered recovered. Six residents have died after testing positive. After Friday's jump, Health District Administrator Judy Pride told the News Gazette that she expected the number of new cases to remain high for a week at least. There are two reasons for that, she said: more testing and clusters of cases. 15 zip codes in Champaign County have at least one case. For more coronavirus coverage, we'll go to the front page article, Some Alone Time. By now, every corner of our community has been touched by the coronavirus pandemic, as you will until the crisis subsides. Staff writer Anthony Zilis spent a seventh week telling stories of some of those affected. The first story is The Retired Couple. Bob Episeth knew Roy Van Buskirk for decades before Van Buskirk moved to the Windsor of Savoy retirement home a few years ago, where Espeseth already lived with his wife, Mary Ann. But previously, the two only saw each other once a week at Kewanee's club meetings. At Windsor, they lived down the hall from each other. They'd run into each other regularly and make plans to go to the weekly coffee club at Stevic Senior Center. Eventually, they began having a glass of wine together, with Mr. Van Buskirk along with another couple. He was a really good guy, had a good sense of humor, and was easy to talk to, Espeseth said. That type of camaraderie was one of the greatest joys of leaving their house and moving to the retirement community, which Mary Ann said has added at least a few years to their lives. Get-togethers with friends are easy to plan, and sometimes they happen by chance in the dining room or during the many activities that take place around the facility. The Espesets and the Van Buskirks last got together for a glass of wine several weeks ago, before the stay-at-home order went into effect and senior living facilities went into a lockdown. Now, the Espesets only see people in the hall every once in a while and from a distance when they're out for a walk around the pond south of their apartment. That's one of the big things we miss, because we don't get together for dinner or breakfast or things like that, Espeseth said. We haven't seen people at all since this pandemic went into effect. While Bob says the couple has a touch of cabin fever, they're doing okay staying in their apartment, reading books and magazines throughout the day. They haven't gotten used to video chatting yet, so outside communication is generally limited to phone calls. Last weekend, they made a point to break out the wine glasses. The occasion was somber, but it was cathartic. Mr. Van Buskirk died earlier in the week, and they wanted to offer a toast to a friend who they got to know in less isolated times. It reminded them of the community they shared and the camaraderie that they are hopefully will share again when they're able to walk down the hall to a friend's apartment and grab a cup of coffee or a bite to eat. That, Bob said, was very enjoyable. The next story is The Teacher Who Runs a Homeless Shelter. Kelly Kemper struck a rhythm with her two jobs for the last few years. After teaching first grade at Southside during the day, she'd run Austin's Place Women's Shelter in the evenings. The shelter was such a well-oiled machine that on nights she wasn't volunteering to stay, she'd simply check in with staff and administrate. School could be crazy during the day, and I might have some shelter things I'd take care of in the evenings, she said. But for the most part, it wasn't as overwhelming as it can be now. The stay-at-home order threw that rhythm off kilter. Now, the two jobs run simultaneously. Kemper and Austin's Place co-leader, Kim Stanhope, promised the women staying with them that they'd provide them round-the-clock shelter until the stay-at-home order was over. An issue, though, arose when their host, First United Methodist Church, was forced to close during the state shutdown. Luckily, the organization has been building up its coffers for the last few years while preparing for a move to 70 East Washington Street, where they'd combine with CU at Home to create one large year-round shelter. For now, they're using that money to put anywhere from 10 to 15 women up in hotel rooms. With less help and more work, Kemper has more everyday duties. All of that money we have in our bank account right now, we're using towards sheltering women, Kemper said. Because we feel like that's what the money was donated for, even though our intent was originally meant to go to the renovation, and what we needed for 70 East Washington. We feel like at this point, sheltering the women is more important, so that's where the money is headed. Meanwhile, she's preparing for another move. As Southside ramps up for renovations, teachers were told to completely empty out their classrooms. Jobs that once went to students, like cleaning desks and lockers and taking home spare items, suddenly fell on teachers' shoulders. Meanwhile, she's meeting with her students twice a week over video chat and trying to compile work to keep them engaged in school while following district guidelines. It's exciting because hopefully we will go back in August and we'll have this new beautiful building to go back to, Kemper said. But it's an added stress on top of trying to deal with the shelter and deal with the students. I miss my kids so very badly, so I try to do Zoom meetings with them and see them twice a week, but it's just not the same. It's the worst part of teaching, which is the preparation and the planning and all of that, without the best part of teaching, which is the kids. So come August, I hope we're in the same space together and able to see everyone's face and get the hugs. Soon she hopes to get back into a flow of teaching during the day and administrating the shelter at night as she prepares to move into renovated buildings for both jobs. For now, though, she's figuring things out on the fly. And while her dual roles may be more stressful than ever, she's confident she can handle both. It's a lot, she said. Teaching brings its own rewards with the kids and the relationships you build with the families and the students. That's in and of itself the reward. As far as the shelter goes, it's one of those things where it feels good, and you know you're doing something for somebody who needs it, and it makes you appreciate all the things that you have. And so it can get stressful, and it can be overwhelming. But in the long run, it's so worth it. And I've said it before, but if not me, then who? I have the energy, I have the capacity, so I feel like I should be able to do that. The next story is The Photographer and the Family Coach. Locked in their house, Christine and Bradley Lieb took their three children to Wrigley Field last week. More specifically, they took their family to Game 7 of the 2016 World Series. Of course, the Liebs are stuck at home along with most of the state. But as painful as the quarantine has been, Christine sees it as a time to bond with her family. So last week, they fired up the grill, sat in front of the TV and ate hot dogs with Cubs hats on their heads as they watched a replay of the Cubs' World Series clinching win. Now is the time to really take time intentionally building these relationships with our kids, with each other, and take time to realize, hey, we're a family, we're a team, and we can go through hard things together and make the best out of hard things together, said Christine, a family coach and founder of the nonprofit Real Life Families. That's the beauty of this forced time together, is that you can just really have fun and spend time together and forge those relationships. And that's what I encourage parents to do. Christine wants to turn the quarantine into a time of bonding for her family and the community as a whole. That's how Real Life Families began CU Curbside Clicks. The initiative is part of the Front Steps Project, where local photographers around the country are taking photos of local families in front of their homes. The photos are free, and the purpose is to both remember a unique time in history and to show that families are going to get through this together, even if they're apart. We come from different backgrounds, different religions, different members of the family, but the point is that we're all in this together, all of us. This is affecting everyone. It shows the kinship and the community within our very diverse community. The program has become more popular than Christine originally expected, so they're extending it. Those who want a photographer to come by their house can fill out a form at reallifefamilies.org. Over 150 photos have already been taken by Bradley, a former News Gazette photographer, and fellow photographers Daryl Homan, Craig Pessman, and Scott Paisley. The diversity of the households in the photos struck Christine. Photos had as many as two parents with eight children, and as few as one parent and one child. Empty nesters had their photo taken, and so did families whose only dependents were their pets. A middle school band director wrote a message to her students on her photo. Another included a mother along with her firefighter husband, her nurse daughter, and three other children who are essential retail workers. "We knew it would bring smiles," Christine said. "Our goal was, what can we do to just really bring families together? Just say, hey, we're all in this together. How can we support you during this time? Make you smile." And it turned into, wow, this is something much bigger and deeper than we thought was going to be. Our next story will be the hotel manager. Sam Samthanam likes to sit on a couch in the iHotel lobby by the fireplace while he works. The hotel's general manager enjoys small interruptions to the work in front of him to interact with guests, whether they're University of Illinois students or faculty, fans in town for a game, or guests visiting for graduation. Since the pandemic began, he still takes that seat on the couch with his planner and his phone, but the atmosphere is much different. "What I miss during this time is the people," he said. "I miss the interaction with the locals, the students, the faculty. That face-to-face interaction where we can see it, we can sense it, we can smell it. I can get a lot done in a phone call or in Zoom, but the personal interaction is what we miss." Normally, April and May are the busiest months for the hotel, between Mom's Day, graduation, and the beginning of wedding season. On Wednesday, just a few hotel workers passed by as he sat in the lobby. A construction crew worked nearby on the new large conference center that's set to be done in the fall. The restaurant sat empty, with one employee cleaning it, and a contractor stood on a ladder in one of the conference rooms as he worked on the room's ceiling projector. A few guests stay at the hotel, which has offered a special rate for healthcare workers who might not want to go home and risk infecting their families. They've spaced out those guests among the floors of the hotel, so interaction is limited. They use a Clorox 360 electrostatic cleaning system to sanitize each room in between use. Interaction with those guests is limited and always from a distance. "We'll have a few guests come and go," Santhanam said. "Some are healthcare professionals that come and stay. Some are police officers. They work so hard, they don't want to go home. Every day, it varies." "Well, it's not completely empty. It's as close as ever. They've had to cancel or postpone around 75 weddings and events in the conference centers, which have been cleared as well. They're using the time to prepare, switching their audio-visual equipment from analog to digital, and cleaning out Houlihan's restaurant, where they've already placed bar stools 6 feet apart to comply with social distancing guidelines. When the stay-at-home order first went into effect, the hotel cleared out all of its perishable food, offering entrees to Daily Bread Soup Kitchen and bringing lunches to essential workers, like those at the nearby VetMed Animal Clinic. "We want them to know we didn't forget you," Santhanam said. Places like iHotel, though, are made for interaction. So while he sits in the quiet lobby, he makes plans for when the people are back and the noise returns. The next story will be The Art Museum. By day, Camila Glowacki tries to make Cranert Art Museum more accessible to people of all ages and types as its education coordinator, primarily organizing and teaching field trips for elementary school students. By night, she's a punk rocker as the guitarist for the band Nectar. 2 years ago, she was looking to fuse her two passions. That's how Art Remastered was born. "I had always wanted to do some sort of pop-up show at the museum," Glowacki said. "But as an educator in the arts who wants to teach people about the work on display, I thought it was best if the musicians are actually performing about what was surrounding them, to actually make a connection with the art rather than using the museum as a venue." Glowacki organized a concert that worked its way through the museum, with six different artists, each playing an original song about a piece of art that inspired them. The genres of music spanned the musical spectrum, with jazz, indie pop, rap, and punk rock all represented at last year's second iteration of the event. The music not only complemented the art, it created an entry point for people who may not have otherwise come to the museum. This year, the museum is closed due to the pandemic, so the show couldn't go on as planned. But that didn't mean it won't go on at all. Each week, starting last Thursday, musicians are performing songs from the previous 2 years on a video from home. At a time when the museum isn't physically accessible, Glowacki is opening it up in a virtual way. "It's a way of engaging with the artwork, even if we can't be in front of it," she said. "It's pushing us to be creative. Of course, visiting a museum, the sort of magic behind it is seeing the original artwork in front of you. The actual thing. So, losing that experience is hard, so we're doing our best to provide a new experience in a new way in this new world we are in." This new world is opening up Glowacki and the museum to new avenues of promoting artwork that they never before considered. And like the world around them, some changes will likely be here to stay. "I think, moving forward, I will want to document events and experiences a lot more and then provide that content online," Glowacki said. "So even if you're not able to come to the museum or you live elsewhere, you can still connect with the museum and experience these events and programs virtually. Because I think that is still a great resource, and I think that would be something to keep us moving forward once we open back up." And next we'll go on to the story, The Singing Principal. Half her hair was painted blue. Her hands were covered by fingerless gloves. Her sunglasses were on, and the lyrics were ready. St. Joseph Grade School Principal Michelle Wagner just needed the courage to step out of her comfort zone and belt out a song. "I don't know why, but the words just came to me, and it was like half an hour, and it was written," she said. "I was like, okay, hopefully I get brave enough to do it." With her daughter filming her in front of a green screen, and the backing track to Journey's Don't Stop Believin' playing in the background, the words spilled out. "I'm just a principal," she sang, "living in a lonely world." For 3 minutes and 52 seconds, Wagner sang her original lyrics to her students as part of her morning video message on April 22nd. Since the beginning of April, Wagner has stood in front of a green bulletin board in her house as her daughter films her. She shouts out birthdays, she gives kudos to students, and she makes announcements. "I was trying to think of things that I could do to keep things normal and consistent for our families," she said. "I know our teachers are working hard to get lessons out, and I just wanted to contribute, I guess. So the kids knew I was thinking about them, too. I was thinking, I'll do our morning assembly every day and just post it on our website and Facebook. I had no idea how many people would be tuning in and paying attention, so it just kind of snowballed. The last month has been a stressful one for Wagner, as she coordinates with teachers and the date for school's eventual openings keeps getting pushed back. But she doesn't want to lose sight of the goals she set when she arrived at the school at the beginning of last year. That's when she began holding short assemblies every morning to start the day. I wanted to try to build a sense of community and family so that we weren't isolated, she said. I wanted them to know everybody in the school cares about them, that it's not just their teacher they can go to for help. And I think it has helped our teachers feel like they can get to know other kids in the school. You see kids up and down the hallway all the time, but you don't necessarily know who they are, know their names. This kind of gets them exposed both ways. So I think this helps us feel more connected on a daily basis. Wagner had no expectations when she began putting together videos for her students, but she's finding that they're a hit in the town of around 4,000 people. She's even heard of adults without kids watching them over their morning coffee. She simply wanted to make kids feel special and cared about. Every so often, she'll see a kid from a distance, and they'll let her know her mission was accomplished. The kids will shout out, "Hey, we saw your video," Wagner said. The kids who had their birthday celebrated, they'll say, "Hey, I saw you said my name." They'll just eat it up. They think they're famous when I say a shout out to them, I guess. I've gotten lots of positive comments. We just love it. It makes us laugh. Keep doing it. So I'll keep doing it. And the next story as part of the coverage will be The High School Podcaster. It started out as a simple, easy assignment in Carolyn McMasterson's U.S. history class at Centennial High School. Junior Will Schmidt was supposed to make a 2-minute podcast about what the first few weeks of the stay-at-home order were like for him. Those 2 minutes became 8, and during the doldrums of staying at home by himself, he decided to make another one. "I made another one the next day just for fun, just to talk about stuff by myself," he said. "I posted it on social media, and my friend said, 'Next time you do one, let me know, and we can talk about sports or whatever.' And then that gave me a good idea as to having people on the podcast to talk about what they've been doing during quarantine. Sports, we've talked about a few different TV shows on my podcast." In all, Schmidt has made 30 podcasts since the school let out with around 20 guests. It's been one of the ways he's been getting through this secluded time when the days seem to run together. Many of the episodes of Schmidt's Sensations focus on sports, but topics range from TV shows to quarantine updates with his friends to general musings. It's Schmidt's way of getting through a time when there's very little to do outside of the few class assignments he has every day, the bike rides he takes on nice days, and the games of Parcheesi and Monopoly he plays with his family. "It's just very boring," he said. "I make a ton of podcasts about sports, so no sports is very sad and lonely. I've been trying to work out as much as I can, ride my bike, play basketball. When the weather's nice, I'll go out for 2 or 3 hours a day. Just Netflix, Xbox, music, that's pretty much what I've been doing." Schmidt's not necessarily surprised with how much he misses school. After all, Snapchat and FaceTime aren't the same as communicating in person. How quickly that revelation came, though, took him off guard. "I probably would have thought I'm going to enjoy it for about 3 or 4 weeks, and then I'd want to go back. But it was only like a week or two," he said. "I'd go back tomorrow if this all cleared up." For now, Schmidt is pouring his energy into the podcast, which he hopes to continue when school eventually resumes. He wouldn't have necessarily thought this was something he'd enjoy doing. He considers himself a quiet person. After all, although during his time in high school, he's become more extroverted. But in a world that's separated, it's a way to connect without having to leave his room. "I've been quiet for a long time," he said. "But the first time talking into the mic with nobody else, I was like, I really like doing this. I want to do this a lot more." And our next story will be the master's students. When she was a kid, Nina Irachi would practice conversation with her cousin, who was profoundly deaf. I was always the conversation partner for him to talk to because we were always together, she said. That back-and-forth, in-person conversation helped her cousin take lessons he learned in speech therapy and put them into practice. That was the first taste of the profession that led Irachi to Illinois, where she is a master's student in the Speech and Hearing Science Department. She's worked with adults with voice disorders, transgender women trying to change their speech patterns, people with swallowing disorders, and most recently with preschool students. Those back-and-forth, in-person conversations, like the ones she had with her cousin, aren't available now. So the restrictions surrounding the pandemic have forced students like Irachi to think creatively. Over the last month, they've created a YouTube channel to make videos that help small children learn speech sounds and concepts. They'll read picture books and create lessons around them specifically geared to speech-language pathology. It's definitely put a lot of things in perspective, because it's a community outreach program, she said. We could potentially help a lot of people and a lot of kids that we otherwise would not have. Of course, speech-language pathologists need to actually speak with their patients. And for master's students, that wasn't possible when the stay-at-home order initially went into effect. Rules changed, though, and now Irachi and her classmates can communicate with parents via teletherapy. Still, it's not the same experience as learning in a clinical environment. I look at this as, I feel terrible for our students right now, U of I professor Clarion Mendez said. Their clinical experience has been completely upended. And I feel terrible for our clients, too, because a lot of these folks are in school because their education has been completely upended. The current situation, though, has caused both students and professors to expand their thinking. And for that, Mendez thinks they'll be better when they move on to work in hospitals, nursing homes, and schools. If my graduate clinicians can adapt this quickly and this fast, if they can handle this complete shift to the way their education is provided, they're going to be ready for anything, Mendez said. They're just going to be the most incredible clinicians. In my mind, at the end of this, if they can handle this, they're going to be the greatest clinicians. That story is last of the coronavirus response section, and also it's about all the time we have for part one of today's reading. This has been Ian with part one of the News Gazette, dated Sunday, May 3rd, 2020. Thanks for joining me, and stay tuned for part two of today's reading in just a few minutes.